Welcome to the Word on the Street podcast. It is Tuesday, May 27th, as always, the year 2000 and chill. With me tonight is my co-host, producer. He's the heir to the throne here in case I am killed in a tornado. We do have warnings left and right here in Austin, Texas. Jake, you're over there in Colorado, safe in the bunker. How you doing?
I'm good. We had tornadoes last week, actually, here in Denver, but I will survive. You will survive. Let's do the damn thing.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Stone Cold Jake for you. He's also got his own podcast, The MMA Podcast. That's what it's called, The MMA Podcast.
We had Tim Kennedy on last week. It was a lot of fun. He had a lot to say, as most people can assume if they know Tim's personality.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later. But first, let's get to our guest. He is joining us. Should mention also joining us is our regular, our co-host, our producer, one of the founding fathers from Team Sonnen. You've seen him on The Ultimate Fighter Brazil 3. He's there right now. Millions of people are watching. He is Coach Jamie, the living legend, Huey. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm outstanding, man, and it's an honor to be on with as you guys say, legend, but Robert is a legend up here in the Pacific Northwest, man. So it's throughout all of the MMA and UFC from the beginning. So he's really the living legend tonight, man. I'm just taking a backseat to him.
Hell yeah. And yep, there, that is our guest who is live on the air with us right now. He is MMA coaching legend. I mean, I've even heard he's pretty damn old school. We're about to find out how much he is. MMA coach Robert Follis. Hopefully I'm not pronouncing your last name wrong, sir. How are you doing, Robert? Welcome to Word on the Street Podcast.
Doing great. You got it perfect, man. You guys can call me anytime with that kind of introduction. Are you kidding me?
The living
doing
legend.
I got a little smile on my face. It's a nice thing anybody said in 3.5 years, I think.
good to hear, man, and thank you for coming on this show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who Robert Follis is? Because we know you're an MMA coach, is this cornering fighters, just being a coach in the MMA gyms, which gyms, which organizations have you seen come and go, and where are you at right
now? I'm living in Las Vegas right now, and I'm helping coach the program at Extreme Couture, world famous, Extreme Couture got back, Rand and I worked together years ago. It was one of the things that helped put me on the map. Was my work with him early on. And we're working together again to rebuild that team and that brand and blow that up. So I'm here in Vegas loving it. It's stunning, beautiful year round compared to Oregon, which I love, but man, it rains a lot there. So, I got involved in martial arts, in my early 20s just to not get my ass beat at work because I was a bartender. Oh. One thing led to another and started training full time. Got some opportunity to start working with fighters and get involved in that arena. And just kind of one thing led to another. It was one of those things that I don't think the sport didn't even really exist. It wasn't one of those things you could have planned from. Like a kid, you're not like, oh, I want to be an astronaut or a fireman or something. You weren't like, I'll be an MMA coach. It just kind of fell into place over the course of time with some good things opening and me jumping on those opportunities and making the most of them and growing it from there. So early on, I helped put a little known gym called Team Quest on the map up in Portland, Oregon with Randy Couture, Dan Henderson, Matt Midland. I was there for about a decade, took a little break, did some independent work, and now I'm here in Vegas with Extreme Couture and helping run it.
Hell yeah. Team Quest, definitely. I was a big fan. I'm sad to see it kind of disbanded, but so you started off then in that area. If it was Team Quest, you must have been in the Oregon, Washington area then, Northwest.
I was living in Portland. I just moved to Vegas a little over a year ago. It's funny, I got a call one day from a guy that was helping coach me, and he said, hey, there's a guy named Randy Couture that's looking for guys to throw punches at him, get ready for a UFC fight. You want to go spar with him? And I was like, yeah, what's the worst that could happen? Very first day, he Billy the backs me right on top of my head, damn near broke my neck. And I was like, I could have broke my neck, I guess, would have been the worst thing.
Damn.
But we trained nonstop from that point on for years and developed a great relationship. And I started bringing to the game what I knew about it. I mean, and you know, a lot of people don't understand MMA wasn't MMA then. MMA was still burgeoning out of, the original concept was let's pit a judo guy against a kickboxer and see which martial art is better.
Right.
So at that point, it was the mixing of martial arts. And now things we take for granted, if you do MMA, you strike, you grapple, you wrestle, you know what I mean? You have all those tools. To some degree, you might have a specialty, but nobody's fighting in the UFC. They can't do some of it all. But early on, it was a pretty lopsided piece of what people were putting together.
Yeah, and
so, got a chance to start working with Randy and sharing what I knew, which was at the time limited, but I had a good eye for making changes and adaptions, and we clicked well together and started adding things and making the game more of a mixing of the martial arts as opposed to wrestling versus, kickboxer kind of thing.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. Mixed martial arts, it probably originally was like referring to the matches being mixed as far as styles.
Because that's exactly what it was.
Huh. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. But then, so you were there back in the day. I mean, like, this was probably the Randy Couture before he was famous, correct? Like, I mean,
I'll tell you a funny story. People, I can't have a guy on the undercard that doesn't have an after party now. I was with Randy in the corner when he beat Kevin Randleman for the world title, heavyweight title. We were at the MGM, I believe. We walked around the corner afterwards with some friends and family. We went to Fat Burger to celebrate, and nobody knew who we were. We stood in line with everybody else and ate it, sat at a table.
Oh, wow.
With the heavyweight champion of the world, and nobody knew who we were when we were walking down the street. Like, that's how small the sport was.
Oh, wow.
It's grown so much in the last 15, 20 years. It's absolutely unbelievable.
And you're telling me you were a 20-year-old guy, a young 20, 22, and then you just got a phone call and someone asked if you wanted to spar with Randy Couture. It was that, like, that's how it came together?
Well, that was a few years later. The first few years I trained in martial arts were just kind of hit and miss. Enough for me to learn some skills not to get beat up at work, which didn't take a lot with drunk guys. But then I started training more in earnest, and after I had started training more in earnest, which was around the age of 26, 27, and then, Randy was getting ready for a fight, and there wasn't MMA fighters out there to call. There wasn't, when we were he was living in Jamie, where was he at? Where's OSU at?
Down in Corvallis?
Corvallis. Yeah, he was in Corvallis. You know what I mean? There was wrestlers down there, but there wasn't any kickboxers around. There was no jiu-jitsu school. I mean, at that time, the best guy in the whole state was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. My first coach in jiu-jitsu was a no-stripe white belt, but he knew more than I did. Like, that's how new the sport was. I mean, nobody knew anything. So when they called, he was just looking for anybody that could kickbox a little bit and throw some punches and get some bodies to work some timing with.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, we take for granted a lot now, like, you call in partners, you fly people in, you've got all these resources to work with because the sport's grown so much. But at that point, it could be a struggle to pull things together. And so, again, just kind of that right place, right time, and not afraid to step up and go take an ass beating repeatedly.
Yeah.
led to some really good things down the road.
Holy shit. So you moved to Vegas about a year ago. What prompted that? Is it just like full-time dedication to coaching now?
No, it's funny. I had, after things had, after I had, after I had split off with Team Quest and left there, had sold my portion out to Matt Lindland, and I was working with a few fighters in Portland, but just kind of laying low. I had an opportunity to also do some executive protection work down here. I trained police and military, do some seminars. And I came down here just to kind of teach, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do as far as the fight community. I'd kind of been just – when I owned Quest, I was working 70 to 80 hours a week and was on the road oftentimes for a third of the year. And I was just kind of burnt out for a little bit.
Yeah.
So when I first got down here, I was teaching jiu-jitsu at a small school, doing some seminars, doing some work with the police and military, which I still do. And then – I've got a bunch of friends and that coach and train at Extreme Couture, and they kept asking me, what would it take to get you over here? And I was like, I'm not sure, I'm really interested. And after about the fifth time, I said, all right, well, let's sit down and really take a look at it. And we came up with some numbers and put together a plan, and we've been banging away at it for about 9 months now.
Nice, nice. Yeah, Extreme Couture, we interviewed another coach, Eric Nixick, a couple weeks ago, actually.
Yeah, great guy. He's one of the reasons I went on. He was getting the position as manager at the same time I was looking to come on as coach, and I basically said, I'll come on with what we negotiated, but only if Eric's the manager, because he's a solid dude. He's had so much to do with this gym, reinvigorating that team and things clicking and coming up. I mean, he's an amazing resource for that gym and just does a phenomenal job. Great guy. Does an amazing job coaching as well. Yeah, stud. Really, really fond of that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. He was a great guy, great guest. Well, a little bit of a harder question here that you might not be able to answer, but the Team Quest, I want to know what kind of happened to it that you can tell us. I mean, there was like some sort of, you know, let's face it, the Team Quest kind of, I wouldn't want to say there was a demise, like, because it still exists in some form or fashion, but I mean, a lot of people started falling out from there.
I think demise is a fair word, and I mean, you know, I have a hard time on these, and I understand the hard questions, and people want to hear the scoop. I've got a golden rule, and that is I don't care how much I even dislike someone. I don't throw people under the bus that I've worked with. It's a professional thing that I do. Yeah. But I'm happy to give you the gist of it. Yeah. And I think the main gist was what the vibe and the energy that got it there shifted through some pieces moving around and some people vying for the attention being about them as opposed to it being about team. When that happened, there was some rumors spread to try and move people out. And rather than a building feeling, it became a tearing down and a pushing out. And that caused all kinds of problems within the gym through the coaching staff, between me and some of the fighters that weren't real problems that were there. Those things started to become personal issues. That was a big reason why I ended up selling out and leaving, was because for me, it just wasn't worth it at that point. I was like, I care about what I do. I care about my guys. I've never done anything less than my best for guys. And when I was being accused of doing things that were unscrupulous or less than, and I knew who was doing the lying and what was going on, mm-hmm. It was time for me to move on. And I think that energy is really what kind of tore that down, was it became less about team and what can we do for them, and it came to be more about what can I get out of this from some of the other people that were upper level in the gym there.
Definitely. So what's the vibe like now at Extreme Couture? Is it are you guys all cool? Is it a family environment, or are you guys just associates?
I mean, it really is, and we've been working really hard on that. I mean, Nick Sick just put together, we had a team barbecue on Sunday, got together and played volleyball and hung out and cooked. You know, we have people getting together and doing stuff where, I mean, it really is that team vibe. And, you know, one of the things when I got to Vegas, and before I come to Vegas, I'd heard this, like, you can't build a team in Vegas. Everybody's for themselves. The fighters don't care. They're only going to do their own thing. And for me, that sounded like a great challenge, because I feel like people do want to be part of a team. But nobody had stepped up and shown the right blueprint and leadership for that to happen. Yeah. You know, I think coaches were vying for, I want fighters to come in, so I'll let them do what they want. You know what I mean? You can do whatever you want. You can be late. You can do this. And, you know, when I came in, we set a standard. You know, you're on time. If you're not on time, you're running sprints. I don't care if you're in the UFC. You know, there's going to be a standard, because it wasn't about me. It's not about me having control. It's about setting a standard for greatness within that team. Yeah. And once that started to get set and people got it, that it wasn't about me, it wasn't about Nick Sick, it wasn't about Dennis Davis, that it was, we're here for you and we're here early. We want you here early because we're going to get the most out of this time. We set a standard for, you know, sparring, that it's a safe environment, that guys can go hard, but people aren't getting the hell beat out of them. And once that started to really click and people started to see, man, other fighters will be here for me if I'm there for them, it's really turned into something amazing.
Yeah. What about MMA as a whole? What has that turned into since you've been there? I mean, you know, I'm not calling you old or anything, but you've been there since the old school.
Yeah, man, it's been
It's mainstream now.
I've had guys in the UFC since 2000.
Damn.
You know what I mean? Like, in the UFC, I've had guys fighting. My first fight was in Japan in 2000.
Almost 15 years.
My first fighter there, and I've had guys in the UFC every year since.
Yep.
I think there's never anything that's cut and dried one way or the other.
Yeah.
I think there's some amazing things. I mean, the fact that guys if you were winning a title, you were making a living.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, those are the only dudes that could, like, train and fight full time. I mean, you got guys coming off the Ultimate Fighter show that are making 60, 70, 80, 90,000 a year. If they got some good sponsorship and they're winning and they're putting things together. So there's some awesome things that the sport growing that big has created the opportunity for there to be enough money for people to, even if they're not getting rich, they're making a living doing their dream and loving it. And I think that's an amazing thing. I love to see that opportunity for these guys that work so hard for it. On the downside, that money creates politics, and it isn't always about the best fighter anymore either, though. It's about, are you marketable? Mm-hmm. Do you get the promotion behind you from the big shows? Is your management the right people? Is somebody mad at somebody that you know? So, I mean, it isn't always about the right fighter. And I mean, I kind of look at our sport, and I think this was actually Chris Lieben that coined this term, we're not in the fight business, we're in the fightainment business. And it's not enough to show up and just win fights. I mean, you look at a guy like John Finch, whose only losses were in title fights or title contention fights, but he's not super personable on camera. He doesn't seem controversial. He doesn't go any after anything, and then you look at other guys like Kale, who's a good friend of mine I've helped work with, Jamie's worked with a ton, who will come off a loss at 85, go into the division at 205 and get a title shot at 205 because they're itself, So there's parts of this sport that I think suffered because of that money, but it's a double-edged sword. It's like, without that money, there's no sport and these guys wouldn't be doing it anyway. So I think there's good and bad to it growing.
I got to ask, before I ask that question, something I always try whenever I'm talking to a coach, an MMA coach specifically, if they haven't, I always feel the need to ask, did you ever think about fighting yourself? What keeps you from, what kept you from trying that route as a way to make money in this?
Yeah, I actually did a few amateur fights. I was slated to do a pro fight and I got my rib cracked right before my pro debut. After that, the gym got really busy and I've said this about fighting. Like, fighting is something, Rob Kamen is world famous kickboxer, has worked with Brandon Duer and some other guys on the UFC, but an amazing kickboxer. He wrote a thing and it said basically, like, unless you have a burning desire to fight, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that burning desire to fight, but I love the sport. I love the strategy and I'm really, really good at helping other guys meet their potential through my coaching. And so I decided to go the route that felt best to me. But it was, I sparred with my guys for years. I still get in and grapple with them. I love the martial arts. It's a piece of my life from that side. But I just didn't have the draw and the desire to get in the cage and fight. People are like, well, you were really good. Why didn't you do it? I was like, well, I was good at selling insurance, but I didn't do that either. You don't have to do something just because you're good at it. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I was, like, my calling was really towards being a coach. And it's kind of funny. You look at most of the really top coaches and very few of them were top fighters. You take Greg Jackson, wasn't an active competitor, but an amazing martial artist. And there's a few guys that have done both sides, but most guys didn't go far with their fight career if they did fight. But they make better coaches because they don't try and put people into their style. They're more willing to meet their fighter styles, I think, if you look at it that way.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
That same thing in boxing.
What was that, coach? Sorry.
I said it's the exact same thing in boxing, what Robert was saying. The greatest fighters don't make the greatest coaches and vice versa.
No, I can see that. I can agree with that. I can't name anybody who's any MMA champion who's ever made the transition to being a coach off the top of my head, actually. So yeah,
I think the only guy that did it for a while and he's not right now. And again, Jim's had a hard time hanging on and staying in that position power, but, Pat Miletich was a guy who did both sides of it very well for a while. And he's one of the few guys that did it well.
Yeah. He's
one of the guys who, you know, he won a title in the UFC and held on to it for a while and then produced multiple champions out of his gym along with it. And that dude was a pioneer and a dude who really got both sides of it. And just an amazing guy in MMA from both junctures, because it is so rare in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true. Ludwig's, I got to give him credit. He's also on fire right now.
He's another guy who's really stepping that. But again, they're usually further and few between.
Yep.
And, you know, I love Ludwig. I'm excited. I think at some point he's looking to open his own gym. I'll be curious to see what he does with developing his own talent and how that goes for him.
Yeah.
In bringing guys up from that and moving forward.
Yeah, definitely.
Be an interesting transition for him to see.
Yeah, hopefully he keeps the streak going. But you mentioned...
I sure hope so. He's such a good guy.
I did get a chance to speak with him. We interviewed him on the MMA podcast, and yeah, he almost got pissed off at me, but we won't get into that. But he was a good guy, though. He was a good guy. I was just asking him about fights being fixed, and he thought I was like attacking like his fighters, but I wasn't. I was asking a general question, but it's neither here nor there. You mentioned a cracked rib. It brings us to, on the line with us right now is our friend, the Ninja. Sitting at home with a cracked rib, but he had a question for you. The Ninja, you were on with MMA coach and legend, Robert Falls. What's up, Ninja?
What's up, coach? It's an honor to be on this podcast with you. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Was there a puff of smoke when you got on the phone?
What's that?
The puff of smoke. You got a ninja name.
That's right. He's deadly, man. You don't even know about this guy. He's insane. He's a legend in his own. But you know, that's all we know about him. His name's the Ninja.
The Ninja.
All right. What do you got?
My question for you is: I'm a part of the Gracie family, and I've kind of fallen into being a coach and an instructor, kind of like you have, to be honest with you. And of course, I'm going to be one of the greatest coaches of all time, a legend like you and Coach Jamie Huey. So I just, any words of advice? I hate to kind of use that cliche term, but anything you got for me? If you had one thing for me.
I'm actually working on a book for coaches coming up, for young fighters coming up that's, and I'm working on some pieces that I think will be really interesting on that. But if I was to give you a couple of things, one would be, first and foremost, don't implement a style for a fighter that isn't his style. Your job of a coach, you know, I heard somebody say, like, Michelangelo would look at a piece of marble, and you know, people would look at it and say, what can I make out of this? He would look at it and say, what does this need to be made out of, and reveal what was already in it to him. I look at fighters the same way. I often won't coach a guy for several weeks when he first shows up to the room. I'll teach him, but not coach him, which are different things. I'll try and develop the style. I'll try and get him to do certain things because I want to see what his natural inclinations are and where he's likely to go, because getting people to fight a style that's not theirs is a surefire way to have them fail. So really get to know your athletes and understand that you don't be tied to what you think they should do. Start seeing what they do and then develop around that. The second piece that goes along with that is, man, you've got to care and be willing to make sacrifices. There's times, you know, I'm 44 years old now. I've been doing this forever. You know, I'm helping guys cut weight. I'm running down and buying little things, you know, getting salt, running around doing errands, and some of the new fighters I work with are amazed that I'm doing that. And I'm like, this job is about caring and providing and being there for your guy. So, you know, if you make it about your athlete, get to know them, help develop their style, help them achieve their success, that's your success. If you chase your notoriety, then very likely you're going to chase them off, not do well with them, and not be somebody.
Nice. Great word. Thank you, Coach.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I hope things go well for you. I hope to meet you at some point.
Thank you.
The Ninja. Oh, you probably hope you never meet him, because he'll be the last thing you ever see, apparently.
Right? I got my eyes open right now. I'm standing outside. I'm a little nervous.
Thank you for taking that question.
I like that color shirt on you, by the way, Coach.
Oh, he's already there.
Yep, see, now you're either messing with me or you're completely out because I'm not wearing a shirt. So there you go.
Oh, he burned you, dude. He exposed the ninja as a phony. Live on the air. I love that. Coach Fallis, all right, I got to ask, you've been there since the Pride era, since before probably, well, I don't know, UFC 1. In your opinion, you've seen a lot of fighters, you've seen them. Like, they've either come through your gyms or you work with them, cornered them, or trained with them. Who were the greatest fighters of all time as far as the old era? And then who is there to watch coming out of Extreme Couture now? Who's hot? I'm talking the best fighters. What's happening?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's so many, and how that gets defined. You know, I mean, I think it gets into to some mental masturbation and how would guys match up with this guy? What would happen if this guy fought that guy?
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I have some of my favorites. I think there's some guys that were just outstanding. I mean, some of the guys we have right now, Anderson Silva on his way out. You know, George St. Pierre currently. You know, you've got Barao who just got beat. But, I mean, I don't think that takes away the greatness of some of these guys of where they're sitting. I mean, I think Randy Couture is arguably one of the best guys of all time, and for good reason. But one of the things I liked about that old time was guys came up and, you know, you didn't have guys building a record to get in. You guys had fighting tough fights, and it was okay to lose. It was okay to win. It was okay to lose again, as long as your performance was at a level that you could compete at that level. So I think there's a really different thing where you got guys getting in UFC now who are cherry picking their way up and developing it more like boxing, which I'm actually sad to see. One of the things I used to love was the fact that a dude could come in and, you know, Randy's record, when you look at the end of the day, is like a 60% record of wins, but he's one of the greatest champions of all time. But his record was that because he put it on the line with really tough guys from day one. So I don't know if I could give you, you know, I mean, it would take some time and some thought to go over it. Like I said, I think Randy was one of the greatest of all time. You know, you got guys like Chuck Liddell and their matchups, unbelievable. But there's so many great fighters, and it really kind of depends on what you want to say and look at. But now, hold on, I'm not blowing that off, but that's...
No, I hear you. No,
that's kind of how I feel about that.
I hear you. So as far as the new breed coming through that you're seeing at Extreme Couture, who are some names to watch if you can drop any of those?
Well, we got some young people that we'll just have to wait to see how they do. I mean, it's so hard to say, you know, there's so many things to make it up to that top level. And one of them just being, is your body durable enough? Yeah. You know, I got some guys with amazing talent, but I tell them all the time. I mean, how getting to that top level now is becoming so much more difficult. I mean, you know, you look at what's coming out of Brazil, and then you start looking at these other countries, and, you know, what used to be, you know, I remember on the Ultimate Fighter 1, like, they were scrambling to get guys to be on that show. Mm-hmm. Like, they were shorthanded. They were calling, like, hey, could you come up two weight classes to be on the show? Like, begging to get guys on.
Yeah.
You know, now you have tryouts, and there's thousands of people that are vying for 16 spots. You know what I mean? So what, you know, for these guys to actually make greatness, We'll see how that pans out. I mean, I'm like, you got 1,000 guys in Brazil right now that are sleeping on a mat training full time because that's their way out. Like, you know what I mean? So to get to that greatness at this point, starting out, like, it's a really tough road to climb. I mean, we've got some legit guys that are already in the UFC. Evan Dunham, who's got a very tough fight coming up. You know, Misha Tate, who's knocking on the door of winning a world championship in the women's division. We've got some other women that are coming in now and training. We're getting a really solid women's team that I think is going to be a force to be reckoned with over time. You know, I'm helping get Brian Caraway. We leave next week for his fight, and that's a dude who's very capable of getting in title contention. He's one of the most amazing athletes I've worked with in that weight division.
Yeah.
Dedicated.
He gets a bad rap.
His knowledge of the sport and his ability to teach it and break it down. This is our first camp, full camp together. I mean, he's a dude who legitimately could make a title run here in this next year and a half. The way things are going for him. So,
yeah, we haven't seen him in a while.
There's some really good things we've got. We've got a young kid named Kevin Lee who's in the UFC, who I think has just a boatload of talent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, I mean, there's so many. Leslie Smith, who I just held corner for at her first UFC, she got called in a short notice. I think she's got a world of talent. And just, like, as far as toughness goes, she might be one of the toughest fighters I've ever worked with. Just grit, like, guy or girl, she's amazing. So I think there's a bunch coming up out of Extreme, and we're really just scratching the surface. The team is coming together. We're getting more fighters in, you know, by the month. I mean, legitimate, tough people coming in that are good training partners that are working with each other. John Alessio, who's been in the UFC longer than I have, we just started working together. I think he's got the ability. He's in Bellator right now to make a run at a title in that show and make a mark. There's some really good stuff coming up out of Extreme right now.
We're going to be watching for damn sure. One of the last questions I'll ask you, sorry for keeping you so long, but
no worries.
How often do you get a chance to talk to somebody that's been there since the beginning?
I got time. I got nothing sitting on the docket, so I'm not in a hurry if you aren't. So you guys got the schedule. You let me know.
Excellent. Uh-oh. Yeah, we just have a couple quick questions for you. One thing I did want to ask, and yeah, that was Jake chiming in there. It was related to the origin of Team Quest itself, because Jake had on Nate Quarry on his podcast one time, gave a pretty lengthy interview. But one thing he talked about, he claimed, Nate Quarry did, that he was the one who came up with the idea for Team Quest and the name when he was talking to Randy one day. And I was just wondering,
that very well could be. I wasn't there for that conversation and didn't know that. I mean, there were a lot of us guys that were together at that point, so that very well could have happened.
Yeah.
I know they already had things going. They had called it Performance Quest, and they had misspelled one of their signs, and it came out Performance Quest, and then they got changed to Team Quest. And yeah, Nate very well have made that suggestion, but the entity was already an idea there. You know what I mean? They were already buying to put together a team, and they had already named it something. They just, once Performance Quest was a gym they had open, they changed that. I'm sure they were looking for a new name. So
right.
That's all I would know about that.
Gotcha. And Coach Jamie Huey, is that, I'm assuming, that's where you got to know Robert Follis? Or how did that, I mean, where do you know this man from, and can you vouch from Coach Huey? I ask him all the time.
Robert, like I said, you know, he's a legend up this area. I mean, I'm up here in Portland, and I went down to Mike Pierce's gym, Rose City, the other day, and I kind of looked around the gym, and I just thought, wow, the influence of what Team Quest was at that time, its influence on the sport is just amazing, and the things that some of the fighters that came out of it. I mean, you could just go down the list of the who's who's. Really how I got involved was, Robert had actually hired Clayton Hires to be a boxing coach down at the Gresham location. And he started bringing guys up, I've kind of told the story before, Jake Ellenberger and Brian Jansen and, Ed Herman and all these guys up to my boxing program in Beaverton. And I kind of got to know them a little bit there. And then, working with Chael and these guys, and then I was offered a position at the Team Quest 12th location. It was an honor to be a part of Team Quest at that time because, I mean, like I said, this is the gym that produced legends. And even though I wasn't a real big MMA fan, I didn't even really watch it. I did watch the Ultimate Fighter the season that Ed Herman was on because I was, hey, there's a guy from Portland on there. And I kind of, that was really my introduction into the sport, except for maybe, Hoyce Gracie years before that. But I didn't even know. In fact, I boxed with a guy named, and Robert knows him. He passed away, unfortunately, but I boxed with a guy named Greg Piper. And he was a Team Quest guy. And I used to talk to Greg about pulling MMA stuff, and we used to kind of go back. And so, back then, Team Quest was really that you really had three sports in Oregon. You had college football, you had the Portland Trailblazers, and you had US, the MMA, which really was, Team Quest was basically the brand. So, and then, through the years, I'm beating Robert, we crossed paths briefly, working with a couple fighters, at Mike Pierce's gym. And, you know, so I've always known who Robert was, and we just got to become friends and you know, highly respected up in this, definitely.
I gotta tell you, you know, getting to know Jamie over the time and seeing his expertise and his caring, you know, when I was telling the ninja about coaching, like, Jamie embodies that in such a huge way. When he was telling me he was looking at moving, you know, looking for opportunities, I was like, bro, there's so much here in Vegas, and I'd do anything to get him in and help him out. And I'm looking forward to having him down here and having him involved in some of the fight camps and seeing how we can add his expertise into what we're doing with our program. So that's a good thing all the way around. Glad we got to know each other up there, and really happy to see that burgeon into something new down here in Vegas too.
Two damn legends. That's what I'm talking about, man. You said you were working on a book, Robert. I can't wait to read it. I hope that actually get, because I know what. Sometimes you start writing and something, and then it never gets finished. I do a little bit of writing and editing myself.
I can tell you right now, I've got a buddy of mine who writes, and he does ghost writing. It'll be under that, because if you ask me a question, I can talk for hours. But if you put me in front of a pen and a paper, I'm like, nothing comes out. So I got a buddy who's going to be helping me put that together. We just talked a couple of weeks ago, and we're lining up the schedule to sit down. And once we get going on, it should bang out fairly quick. But I really, like I said, I want to lay out some groundwork, you know, for young fighters to look at, what to look at in management, how to pull things together, what things to look out for in training, what kind of things in coaching, what are you going to need if you want to go to the top, and a section for young coaches that are kind of looking at, you know, how do I work with fighters? How do I develop a program? How do I get guys into an upper show and develop that mindset and that team, to get it going. So, I'm excited to get that out there and be able to pass on, you know, some of the knowledge I've worked hard over the last 18 years of putting together. And, you know, I used to joke with people when we opened up Team Quest and I took over and really got it going. I worked 80 hours a week. People are like, why did you work so much? I said, well, I spent 40 hours fucking it up and 40 hours fixing it, you know? And so it's nice after laying out a blueprint to try and help some other people along and, you know, share the sport in a way that they don't have to go through those same mistakes as a fighter and or as a coach.
Yep. There's a Robert Fallis book coming out. I'm going to read it on day one. I'm going to buy it on day one. I also do a little ghostwriting myself, so don't hesitate. I would just love to read it. I'm not going to lie, but giving you some feedback and whatnot, I'm your guy. I honestly just... The veterans of the sport, the people that have been there, the history needs to be documented. I've read Big John McCarthy's book is probably, as of now, the Bible, really, as far as the UFC goes, and somewhat MMA. But those are the kinds of books that we need coming out. And yet, you would definitely qualify as one of the must-have authors. I just...
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, and mine probably won't be as much historical, although I'll use historical stories for examples would be kind of the gist. But I'm not really looking to write on my life in MMA because I don't feel like it's close to being over yet.
Yeah,
I plan on writing memoirs about the age of 80.
Yeah, hopefully you'll make it.
You know, then I'll be willing to tell some stories. But, you know, for right now, most of those stories are personal stories and for me and for some of the other people, and we'll just leave them at that. And if you get to know me, we sit down and have a beer, I'll share some with you.
Hell yeah, and hopefully we can have you back on the podcast soon, man. It's been great.
Yeah,
man.
You let me know. I'm happy to come in and share anytime. Great. I'd love to see you guys out spreading the word about the sport and bringing people on and giving fans a chance to hear what's going on behind the scenes. It's phenomenal, I think. I love that about this sport, that we can be grassroots still, even as big as it is.
Yep, it's definitely it's exploding right now. Now you got people like me just putting out a podcast out of nowhere. When 5 years, 6 years ago, I had never even ordered a UFC on pay-per-view.
Right.
Yeah, and here we are, definitely. I can't thank you enough for your time, Robert Fallis. Where can people find you, talk to you, contact you, look up Extreme Couture? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me at Extreme Couture. You can contact me through there. I'm on Twitter under Robert, at Robert Fallis. Instagram. I'm NW Photo Guy. So, you know, give me a follow on there. If you got questions, anything I can do, you know, to help out or answer time driven, I'll absolutely, you know, be able to do. But Twitter is the easiest way, you know, give me a shout out on there. And I'm under Facebook under Robert Follis as well. Pretty easy to find.
Excellent, people. That you heard it right there. At Robert Follis on Twitter or Facebook. Robert Follis, that is F-O-L-L-I-S. Robert, thank you so much. We will let you go right now. But yeah, we will. We definitely have to get you back on and have a more in-depth thing. And keep
absolutely.
It up with the book.
Like I said, anytime.
I already bought your book. All right, that's consider that one sale.
I got pre-sale started. There we go.
Yeah,
I love it.
Started it. All right, man. We'll let you go.
Guys, you guys have a good night. Be safe. Don't let those tornadoes get you. And we'll talk again soon.
Hell yeah! Thanks a lot, Robert. You have a good night.
All right. Take care. Bye.
There he goes, Robert Follis, legendary MMA coach. Another one, living legend right here, Coach Huey, man. I liked him, man. He seemed like a good guy. He did have a scary quality to his voice, I have to say. It was almost like a pro wrestler kind of voice he had on him there. Is he a nice guy, or is he someone that just walks around looking like he could kill you?
No, Robert's good, dude. I got down and we went out.
Sorry, Coach. We got a bad connection right now.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, that's a thousand times better. Yeah.
I got down to Vegas to work Mitch with Keith Barry, and I was excited to see Robert. We know each other obviously from being up here on the side, and even Dennis Davis is actually another Portland resident, and Randy Couture. So we kind of there's a whole Oregon theme going on down there. But, Robert took me out for dinner. We had some beers and we talked for a couple hours, and he just said, hey man, he goes, there's really a lot of opportunities down here in Vegas. This is a fight capital of the world. And he goes, I'll do anything for you. Anything I can do to help you out. And he's been great. Eric, Nick Sicko, it's been great. Dennis has been great. You go into a new gym and you're not really quite sure what you're going to get. Sometimes if you have conflicting skill sets with other coaches, they start to kind of feel a little intimidated, or there's kind of this tribal type, thing that happens. Mm-hmm. I never got that at Couture. I met the boxing coach, Tim Lane. He was great. Ray Cepho, another striking coach. It was just everybody that I dealt with down there was hands out. And actually went out with Nick one night, and he told me, he says, the thing is about this sport that people don't realize, I completely agreed with him, was he says, he goes, there's enough cake to go around. And he goes, and if there's not, build a bigger cake. And that's really,
we kind of not sure if you're there anymore, Coach. The phone, it sounded like there was a nuclear explosion, maybe in a couple cities away, and then it killed your connection. I'm not saying the coach was killed in a nuclear attack, people, but it sounded like his service died. I think he did drop off the call. We'll try to get him back on in a second, people. Coach Jamie Huey. While I'm dialing him, Jake, are you there, man?
Yeah, I'm still here, buddy. You know it.
All right, man. Jake, do you know any good jokes while I'm pulling it up and dialing Coach Huey?
I'm trying to think of a nice, wholesome, clean joke. What do you get if you fill out the entire activities page at Denny's?
What do you get?
A degree from Florida State University. Hey-o!
Oh, my God. My God. How's life working for you, Jake? You moved to Colorado from Florida. You've been there a couple months now. You tweeted
almost
me a beautiful
months,
set
yeah.
of pictures earlier. What are you thinking, man?
Yeah.
Did you make the biggest mistake of your life, or are you loving it?
I made the best choice of my life. I've been here almost 10 months now. I'm really stoked. Two of my buddies from Florida are going to be moving here in a couple months. That should be a lot of fun. But Colorado, I love it. I see we're dialing Coach Huey back right now.
Yes, sir. Man.
The subscriber you have dialed is not available or has traveled outside the coverage area.
I would guess the latter. Hopefully, I haven't had a chance to check my Twitter feed or the news, but hopefully the United States is not under some form of nuclear attack. I was just joking about that, but I'd feel pretty bad if it did happen until, of course, I blew up as well. We'll try again in a couple minutes, I guess. I did want to get a quick, tough recap. I got to be honest, I had a little issue with UFC Fight Pass when I did try to watch the episode. There was like a buffering, quitting issue on me. I don't know if it was my connection.
Of Time Tough Warner. Brazil 3 or Tough 19?
Tough Brazil 3, sorry. The only one that matters. Chael Sonnen versus Wanderlei Silva with Coach Huey on it. He's one of the assistant coaches, people. But yeah, there was a little problem. I was not able to watch the entire episode. So I was going to do a new thing where we just have the coach who was there break it down, just speak the truth of the matter, not this edited, in the can version that we're seeing. What is the truth? We don't know. We got Vinny Magalhães coming out, admitting, after that rumble, the infamous brawl, the Brazilian brawl between Chael and Wanderlei. They started knocking each other around. After that brawl, Vinny was saying Wanderlei would just beef with him after that. Pretend whenever he's walking by him, just pretend like he was going to punch him or snap at him or spit at his feet or something. Just being an animal, it seems like. Really preposterous. We hope to have Vinny on sometime. God bless him. I don't know if we're going to be able to get the coach back, people. So for right now, unless I get a message from her or something, let's just carry on with the rest of the Warden Street podcast. Let's get to some MMA topics, people. With me right now on the show, of course, the ninja, my bastard son, Jake from the MMA podcast.
Do I think you can beat my ass? Hell no. Do I think I can beat your ass? Why, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. And can I get a hell yeah if he's still there? Our friend Officer Allen protecting the mean streets down the BR of Louisiana. Allen, are you there?
Hell no.
Oh, hell yeah.
What?
What?
I love it, people. Yeah, MMA topics. Glad you all could join us. Like I said, I'll send Coach Huey a tweet while I'm pretending to listen to the next person I ask a question of.
There's one obvious topic we got to talk about.
You might as well shoot. The floor is yours. The microphone is yours. The Word on the Street golden microphone. Passing it to you.
Honestly, I would break it down, but last Wednesday's Word, or sorry, not last Wednesday's Word on the Street, last Wednesday's MMA podcast, we all were talking about how Henan Barão, pound for pound king, I was saying he is the most talented fighter the sport has to offer. And our boy Ross Finkelstein, your bastard son, he broke it down why Dillashaw could give Barão fits. So it would only be fitting if the Jew broke down what happened, because damn, he really sort of called it.
All right, the best Jew in the business, Ross Finkelstein. Hopefully he'll do us the honor of addressing the crowd, the audience, and talking about TJ Dillashaw taking the crown away from the Brazilian Henan Barão. Basically, Henan Barão is financially ruined at this point. He had to beg for money just to get back home to Brazil. That's the word on the street. But Ross Finkelstein, my bastard son, you are on the Word on the Street podcast. What do you have to say about this? Did you believe in this shit, this TJ Dillashaw, enough to bet? Talk to us, man.
Let's not talk about betting. Betting hasn't necessarily gone going so smoothly in the past. Well, we're not going to discuss betting on my part, but I did say, and I've been saying forever, not to sleep on TJ Dillashaw. TJ Dillashaw is a phenom. TJ Dillashaw is one of those freak, like, athletes that they're not necessarily a freak athlete in the sense that they're the best wrestler, they're the best kickboxer in the world, or they're the best at this. I mean, this is a guy who never won an NCAA title or a tournament or really even placed in tournaments. This is a guy who never won a state championship in wrestling. He was never the top guy, but he was made to fight. I mean, this is what he's meant to do. He found his niche, and he's running with it. And I said on the MMA podcast, I think I even said it on this podcast last week, maybe a couple weeks back. I've been saying it forever. TJ Dillashaw's rate of improvement is second to none. His rate of improvement is higher than anybody else's in mixed martial arts. And I said, if TJ Dillashaw improves the same amount as he did in between the Sun Tsao and Easton fights, as he does in between the Easton fights and this fight, then he would beat Henan Barão. And he did just that. He not only improved tremendously, he improved beyond what I even expected. He looked like quite possibly the best fighter in MMA, period, in any weight class, pound for pound. It was a spectacular performance. He destroyed Henan Barão. At the end of the day, Henan Barão likes to keep his opponents on the outside. He likes to use that jab. He's a minimalist. He'll show little things, and he'll snipe you down and finish you with one big shot. But once he gets past that jab, I mean, when he gets into exchanges, he swings wildly and he's got his chin up. TJ Dillashaw utilized angles, utilized superior movement and footwork, and overall just better boxing game, period. He was the better fighter. He danced circles around Henan Barão.
You know what? I've heard perfect. Enough of this, man. And a lot of people are saying that it wasn't so much TJ won, but Henan Barão lost this fight. They're saying there's even a rumor that his water was poisoned. He was sick. He was injured. Who knows?
This is the first fight I think I've seen in like forever where a champion and a champion that has like this aura about him, like Barão or Anderson, lose. This is the first time I've seen them lose in a while, and literally no one is saying anything about how the champion lost the fight. Everyone's talking about how Dillashaw beat Barão. No one is talking about how.
Yeah, well, Barão. What do you know? I got the word on the street, and everybody's talking about how Barão was probably maybe poisoned. They don't know if it was water or food. That's the debate right now. All right. But you know what? Calling us back is the coach himself. I can't believe it. Hopefully this works out. Coach Huey, are you back there? Sorry we lost you. We don't know what was going on. These cell phones.
Man. I'm good, brother. I'm back.
Awesome.
That's weird. Yeah, I thought maybe you guys got swooped up by a tornado or tsunami or whatever the hell you got going on over there.
I'm still alive, but we did speculate that perhaps you had been blown apart in a nuclear attack on... I don't know why they would attack. Are you in Vegas or Portland right now?
I'm in Portland. I'm in Oregon.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make any sense. Why would the terrorists blow up Oregon?
There's nothing here but good beer. That's about it.
You're damn right. And some good boxing and rain. Of course, the trail. Coach, we got you back. I did want to ask you, full disclosure here, I did not watch. We might have actually lost him again. Who knows? But I did not get a chance. I have not had a chance to see the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, we lost him.
Oh man, there's something going on, people. This is a conspiracy on the level of Henan Barão's poison water bottle. Coach Huey has dropped off the call again. He's calling back.
Is the tough Brazil production crew producing this show right now?
The powers that be might be trying to sabotage this call. Coach Huey, are you back with us?
I'm back.
Excellent. I don't know what's going on. Did you move to Metro or something, man? It's a conspiracy, dude. But yeah, I was saying, I guess we should get to this as quickly as possible. We don't know how long this connection is going to last, if the world's ending or not. Coach Huey, this episode of the Sunday's episode of the Ultimate Fighter Brazil 3, I have not had a chance to watch it yet. I don't like talking crap about UFC Fight Pass, but I've had like buffering and like streaming issues trying to watch this particular episode. I don't know what's up with it. Everything else on Fight Pass works fine. For some reason, this episode, I can get like 5 to 7 minutes into it, and then there's just problems. It's freezing up on me. It's so choppy. Like, you ever see a bad chopping, buffering video, and you're like, ugh, what's the point? But I figured this is a great opportunity for a new segment on the show, where you just recap what happened, because you were actually there, man. What we actually need to know, you know, and of course you can skip who advanced in the Octagon Girl competition, I have to say. But who was it this week that fought? And you know what? We're full on spoiler mode here, people. So yeah, give me the update. You know, just man to man. I'm sorry. I honestly tried to watch it a few times, but it's not working for me.
Well, our heavyweight Vitor Miranda fought their heavyweight Rick Monster, and you know, Vitor was actually a coach on the Ultimate Fighter season Brazil season 2. So he's a very he was one of those guys that, you know, everybody always says this guy's going to win, but Vitor was one of those guys that stood out. In fact, he might have been our first pick on our heavyweights. I can't remember. But you know, Rick Monster was a guy that I actually cornered to get in the house, and Rick went right at his guy and just blew him out of the water, like within less than a minute of the first round. So Rick was a guy that I really wanted on our team, but we didn't get him. But we were absolutely excited that we had Vitor. Great fight. Rick went out there and just went for broke, and then he started to slow down. Vitor weathered the storm, and then Vitor, you know, caught him with some shots, and he got on the ground, ground and pound. It was it. So there it was. Vitor Miranda advanced to the finals. He will fight their heavyweight, Antonio Zapata. So and then our two middleweights went out there, obviously, and Lyoto went out there and fought the Demente, which is Vanderlei's buddy's coach. You know, one of the guys that runs the gym with him in Las Vegas. And that was a great fight. That was a tough fight. That was back and forth. But I had Lyoto, and everybody else had Lyoto winning 2 out of 3 rounds easily. Not easily, but definitively is a better word for it. And so we've got Warley Alves versus Lyoto. Our two middleweights matched up against each other. So it's kind of a mirroring of 17 in the sense. When we have Uriah Hall and Kelvin Gastelum facing off, we've got two middleweights facing off. And we've got our heavyweight Vitor Miranda versus Vanderlei's guys. So I believe that makes it 3-1. And I believe that means the Team Dark Side, the bad guys, are undefeated as a coaching staff and as the Ultimate Fighter coaches. So
my God,
see what happens.
You're declaring
next.
Victory already. Holy
well,
shit.
We've got three guys in the finals. Now here's the thing: we get them to the place at the end. Now once the show's over, they go back. They work with their coaches. Vitor's part of Team Nogueira. Warley's got his coach. So you know, kind of what happens from here, obviously, is up to the fighters and their coaches. So as far as our role as coaches up to this point, you know, we've done what we did. It's 3-1, so it's absolutely victory.
Yeah, it's definitely. He's calling it right now, announcing it on the Warden Street podcast. Team Sonnen will defeat. Just simple math. It's already done. It's in the books. We'll defeat Team Vanderlei Silva on the Ultimate Fighter, just like they defeated Team Jones. Congratulations, Coach. I hadn't realized that. This is an epic moment. This is like when Stone Cold won the belt. This is like when Hulk Hogan slammed Andre the Giant at the Pontiac Silverdome.
I was really proud of what we did there. Vinny, Scott, Clayton, myself, Eric, JL, Chris Wilson came in and gave us a hand. Hortensia, really, I mean, we were down 0-4. We had lost four straight in the beginning. We're in Brazil. We had so many things working against us.
I have to ask you about that. When you guys were 4-0, like, how much were you guys just, were you guys, was there ever any talk about quit and, like, just being like, oh, man, this is bullshit, this is rigged, this is not going to happen, when it was 4-0 against you?
You know, because all the guys that, even the guys that had lost those four fights initially, I mean, they were close fights, man. Bamba got a bad decision. Bamba should have, I believe Bamba should have got another round. There really wasn't a disappointing fight, even though we didn't quite get the decision initially. We knew we were still in the fight. We weren't totally outgunned. And, you know, one thing I really respect about Chael was, you know, he sets the tone and he says, what are we going to do? Are we going to train harder? We're already training hard. Are we going to train less hard? You know, you start kind of like looking in the mirror and like, well, you know, this is a sport where things happen. You know, there's so many variables. Like, I always say boxing's rock, paper, scissors. This is rock, paper, scissors with 1,000 combinations, man, because MMA's got so many more variables. So we just continued to do what we were doing, and I believe that was the right thing. And it paid off for us. Once Lyoto got in there, we won 5, 6, 7, 8. Lost a fight, won a fight, lost a fight, won 3 fights, 2 fights. That's really, if you've done it a few times, if you've been in this experience, you know that, you just continue to, you know, consistency to purpose, and results will come as long as you're doing the right thing. The result is a reaction of doing the right thing. The action is doing the right thing. So we knew if we just focused on what we could control, doing the right thing, that the reaction of success was going to come, and that's kind of what we did, and it paid off.
Yeah, definitely. Now I have to watch this episode, man. I didn't. I think there's like 2 left in the Ultimate Fighter Brazil 3. I noticed there was a tweet earlier that came at you. Somebody from Brazil was asking if you were going to actually go to the Ultimate Fighter finale in Brazil, and you. It's actually surprised me. You're actually not going to be there. Apparently, they forgot to invite the team, son, and coaches. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, you know, we didn't get an invite.
My God,
you know, obviously, we would have loved to win. I know there was a lot of people on Twitter asking about us that would have liked to see us there.
Yeah, it does make sense.
But you know, I'm not really in a situation where I'm going to come out of my pocket and do all the paperwork and
you shouldn't have to. That's the whole there, so. Yeah, there's a principle here. You shouldn't have to, and it should have just, I mean, would you have gone if it had been offered to you?
You know, right now I would have. There's some responsibilities that I have. You know, Clayton's got Uriah Hall up here. He's training up here. Bamba has been training up here. So, as far as our responsibility as coaches, as long as, we can facilitate what we need to get done, I mean, heck yeah, absolutely. Going down there for a weekend or a week or something, would have, I love Brazil, man. Absolutely. I would have been there in a heartbeat, but man, you know, it's all right. Life goes on. We'll definitely, hopefully we coach another season, either in Brazil or somewhere else. If not, it definitely won't be my last trip to Brazil, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you have plenty of reasons to go back. Coach, what is on your plate right now? What are you, what do you got going on? Everybody's, you know, you're always doing something. You're bouncing around left and right. Last we heard, you were working out back in Portland. What's coming up? What's on your schedule? How's everything? How's everything going? What's the word in the street about you?
Oh man, you know, I'm just up here in Portland, getting all my stuff kind of loose ends tied, cars sold, trying to make some things happen to get on the road here, hopefully in the next 3 weeks, back down to Vegas, mm-hmm. You know, kind of see what I can do down there. So as of right now, I'm just in Portland, just kind of like tying up some loose ends, getting some things done. You know, I've got a lot of friends, a lot of relationships up here that, I'm definitely going to miss, but the nice thing about Vegas is everybody ends up in Vegas at some point. So
yep.
I don't feel too bad about leaving. You know, I'm going to see everybody once they get down to Vegas for vacation or to train or whatnot. So, yeah, that's basically what I'm doing right now. Just kind of focusing on getting some personal stuff done.
I hear you, man. And we talked to Coach Robert Fallis. He moved to Vegas. He made the move. You think that's something you'll ever do? Just straight up, just move there and do your thing.
Oh, that's what I am doing. Yeah.
That's the plan.
That is my plan. Yeah. I'm in process right now of, you know, kind of liquidating some of my assets here so that, when I get down to Vegas, there's less things that I have to move from point A to point B. So yeah, 3 weeks from now, I will be a Las Vegas resident.
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay. Well, damn. Congratulations. I myself, there's just something about a desert. I just wouldn't do it, even though Las Vegas is one of my favorite cities that I've ever been to in this life. Except I've been.
You know, you got a place anytime you're there, brother.
Hell yeah! I haven't been there since they got rid of the Star Trek experience at the Hilton Hotel. I've been kind of protesting Vegas since then. But yeah, if you're moving down there. Maybe I'll even come out to see the rematch happen this summer between our listeners and regular callers, Officer Allen, and Yell the Truth.
Yeah, all of us, are going to be there. It's going to be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys should all meet up, do an exclusive with the coach. Maybe coach, we mentioned it, but I think you should show up to this rematch and. Either officiate or make sure these idiots don't kill each other.
We've actually been talking to Coach, and Coach is going to help us put it on, actually.
Yeah, we're with Eric over at Extreme Couture. Gave us a green light on using an octagon or mat space or whatever you guys want to do with it. So, yeah, we'll have some fun, man. Absolutely.
Oh, it'd be so awesome. Yeah, go all out. They actually do want to, Alan and Yao, they stepped it up. The first match was a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu match. They actually want to do a little contact here. They want to try for a little MMA match here. And of course they are.
Hey, you know, make it an MMA triathlon, you know. Do some stand up, do some groundwork and
we figured that it would be like a 70% like, you know, hard sparring. And then once it went to the ground, then it would be, you know, open game, anything, you know, no strikes from the ground. But as far as like submissions and grappling, then
we'll have some fun, man. Somebody definitely needs to bring a camera, or somebody's got some production talent.
Oh, that's all taken
definitely.
Care of.
Yep, it's gonna be streaming live on the show.
We did have one question.
We'll do something like extreme, yeah.
We just wanted to know, like, would it be possible for us to pay to be able to train during the week while we're there? I know, like, other gyms do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's you know, get a hold of me, you know, tweet me or email or whatever, and let's set it up. Let's get some things set up. That'd be fun.
All righty.
I love it so much. What do they call it? An exhibition. MMA match between my listeners and regular callers, Officer Allen and Yao. Yeah, this brings joy to my heart to see these people hurt each other. And for my gain here, it will be on the Word in the Street podcast. It will be streaming live. Coach Huey hopefully will even be there in person. That alone is worth the price of admission, people. But yeah, definitely, Coach. There's a lot of build-up to their rematch. A lot of it is ridiculous. You might see some ridiculous angles and videos hyping this thing come out.
We are doing a pre-fight presser. We're doing weigh-ins. We're doing the whole thing.
Yep. There's going to be promo videos, and we'll try to keep your name out of the utterly ridiculous shit as much as possible, Coach. But this is going to be a good one. It's going to be one for the books. And good to know you're at least willing to try to help out. But feel free to bail anytime you realize how ridiculous this is going to be. But yeah, Coach, we won't keep you on too much longer. Sorry about the phone problems. I don't know what was going on, but it happens, man. That's the year 2014. Still can't figure this crap out. It's an outrage, people. But yeah, Coach, we will let you go here because we're about to cover topics like whether or not Ronda Rousey had breast implants. That's the word on the street. I don't know.
That's where it goes.
That's what they're saying. Yep.
It's like Las Vegas. It's like the farther you go down the strip, the little crazier and shadier it gets. And once you pass the stratosphere, it's over with.
Yep. Once you pass the stratosphere and once it gets to a certain time at night, you're dead. You're as good as dead. They shot Tupac on the strip. On the strip.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Right in front of the casino. It was nonsense. But yeah, that's taken it way back in the past. But Coach Huey, where can people find you, contact you, look you up, harass you, stalk you, hear your word on the street?
Twitter at Coach Jamie Huey, Instagram at Coach Jamie Huey, website www.coachjamiehuey.com, and every Tuesday on the greatest podcast that has ever existed, the Word on the Street podcast. Oh, and also the MMA podcast.
Sorry. Oh, hell yeah!
Every Tuesday, man, and that's where I'm at.
Excellent. Coach Jamie, the living legend, Huey, thank you for coming on the show, as always. I'll talk to you a little bit after the show, as always, and I will watch that episode. I can't
wait. Yeah, it's a good one.
This is the one where you're calling it right now. Team Sonnen takes the victory over Team Vanderlei Silva.
It's a wrap, son. It's a wrap.
As always, there was never a doubt in my mind, except, of course, when it was 4-0. But congratulations to you, Chael, Scott, Vinny, the dude with the glasses and the spiky hair. Chris Wilson guy.
Yeah, we're going to have to get him on the podcast, too. He's a character.
Yep. Hortensia, Brittany Smith, apparently, if you're seeing the videos coming out.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that, Coach? Why are they in the tough videos that the UFC's putting out? Why is she called Brittany Smith? And then underneath that, it says Chael's wife.
Yeah, I don't know. They were married. They're legally married, and she is Sonnen. It's not Smith, so I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Somebody dropped the ball on that one.
I've never seen a marriage certificate. I do have to keep it real. I don't know what's going on
here. Yeah, right.
Might be some sort of legal thing. I don't know. I don't know, people. We'll get to the bottom of that. But yeah, Coach, thank you once again for coming on. We will talk to you soon, man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care, man. See ya.
Bye.
There he goes. The living legend himself, Team Sonnen's Coach Jamie Huey. Man, changing lives every day. He doesn't know what's going on with this Brittany Smith, though. That's out there, man. It's crazy.
He's giving bums like us opportunity.
No kidding, man. It'd be great if he does hook up that Extreme Couture link and make this happen. I think he will. He's a man of his word. I gave him enough warning that it was going to be ridiculous, so he can't claim, I didn't know this was going to be an outrage. He knows. God bless him. He's one of the best in the biz. One of the nicest guys I've ever met. Well, never met in my entire life. But he saved my life. Anyway, let's get back to the MMA topics before we wrap up this episode of The Word in the Street, people. We do have, again, Ninja, Ross, Jake from the MMA podcast, and, of course, Officer Allen. Allen, dude, you're going to rematch. We were just talking about it. So now it's going to go from a BJJ match to a straight up amateur MMA match with some sort of crazy ass rules. So if there's going to be rules, do we even know who's going to ref this damn thing? Does anybody know? Does anybody have any reffing experience?
I think we're going to try and get Jamie to ref it.
That would be fair. He's got no stake in this. Huh. Yeah, he would be pretty damn good. And I'm sure he's a bigger, more powerful man than both of you. No offense, Officer Allen or Yao, who is not here to defend himself. And by the way, people, just a little program note. Earlier tonight, sorry if I sounded a little funny. I'm actually, like, my nose is still bleeding. I'm missing, like, at least two teeth. Right before the show earlier tonight, I was at the convenience store and I was assaulted. Randomly assaulted, punched in the face. But I'm here. I'm still doing this podcast. I might tell the story a little bit later, but as God is my witness, I was almost broken in half. Random assault. I don't know what it's like, the new knockout game or something. It was horrible. But I'm here. I'm on painkillers. And, you know, just between sentences and when I'm throwing off to other people on the microphone on the show, I'm just, you know, I'm draining blood. I'm spitting out blood. My nose, it just won't stop bleeding. I'm in bad shape, people. And I know it's hard to believe because I sound all right. I've been doing the show for almost an hour now. But no, I'm broken in half, people. But I won't get into it right now because we have MMA topics to talk about on this MMA podcast. Let's go ahead and, yeah, we were talking about the Dillashaw-Barao thing. Yeah, all right. Ross gave him half a chance. It paid off, whatever. But honestly, Hennen Barao didn't show up 100%. Come on. That wasn't the Hennen Barao we knew. I don't know. I was talking about maybe they poisoned him, but, you know, maybe he just took a dive, a straight up paid dive. Maybe it was time. We saw how poor he was. He was utterly destitute. He was washing his clothes in his bathtub. All right. You think he has a cell phone? No. He didn't even have a cell phone. Did you see any computer in his place? The only piece of technology was the camera that was brought in to film him living in utter squalor. It was disgusting, people. I don't like to bitch about fighter pay. I never do. But Jesus, man, this guy, maybe his manager was ripping him off and he doesn't know, you know. He's just, you know, he's from Brazil. He's in the favela, man. Just think he had air conditioning. I guarantee you there was not air conditioning in that place. And he was the world champion for years. What do you guys think about Hennen Barao being poor as shit, man? You think he took a dive just for the money? And seeing the champion living like that, a UFC champion on video living like that. What do you guys think of that? I want to get everybody's reaction. It's open mic now from now on, guys. Open forum, unmute. Chime in, talk amongst yourselves as if we were at a Vegas club having a beer, watching the fights.
Well, Hennen made six figures at 173. It's not a matter of him being poor. It's a matter of him wanting to live the Spartan lifestyle. You know, back at home, his family is doing fine. His family has a washing machine, a dryer, but Hennen Barao chooses to, during training camp, separate himself from everything, from his family, wash his own clothes, just live that Spartan lifestyle leading up to his fights. And honestly, I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not he sticks to that going forward. Because I was telling, I forget who I was on Skype with, it may have been Ross, right afterwards, like, man, like, Hennen Barao has got to feel so bad, not only because, you know, he lost the belt, lost his pound-for-pound ranking, etc., but, you know, he's separated himself from his family for, like, 7-8 weeks, and after you lose a fight, doing that and it not, you know, paying off, he's definitely got to be second-guessing himself a bunch.
You know what? I'll just put this question out there. I want to know what you guys honestly, if you had to guess, Like if it was Family Feud or something, you're on a game show, you have to guess. How much money do you think Hen and Burrell has in the bank right now, people? I'm asking all everybody just guess. Make an educated guess. How much money do you think this man has in the bank right now?
He probably has a whole lot of money in the bank, but because he's not using any of it.
One or two mil. I mean, aside from the UFC, he's done. I think like a Doritos ad with Jose Aldo or some shit.
Doritos money.
Yeah, he's the Brazilian fighters in the UFC are insanely popular in Brazil.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he's got $1 million. Burrell has probably, I'd say, $600,000 to $700,000, maybe $800,000.
Less than a mil, we're hearing.
Remember, Ross just being the contrarian. He doesn't have a million. Like he doesn't have a million. He has $800,000.
Ross just gave you the $1 Bob answer. Right.
Let me explain why. Remember when Burrell entered this, he had nothing. Like, he had no money.
He still has nothing.
And he's only been in this for a while. When he gets into this, his contract was, what, 8-8? So you're making 8-8 per fight. So, all right, 16,000 a couple times. He had nothing.
They take that at the airport from him every time he flies back.
Yeah, he's got to pay for all these things. He's got to pay for this and that. He's got to pay coaches eventually.
Favela fees.
At the end of the day, he just finally signed a new contract that wasn't his old. I believe it was like 20-20 or something. Or it's like 16-6. Like, he had a really low contract. He finally signed something that's like 70,000.
And then he drops the belt.
Yeah, he dropped the belt, but he'll come back.
What was in this contract then? You know what I'm saying?
It's a 3-fight deal. It's not a 10-fight contract. It's not a 8-fight deal. It's not a long-term thing. It's a 3-fight deal. For $70,000+. So. Yeah.
Well, who knows, man? They might have taken advantage of this man. They might have said, look, here's a 3-fight deal at this incredible rate, but you got to do us a little favor. And his name is TJ Dillashaw.
If Burrell goes out and theoretically, who is Burrell going to fight in his next fight? He's going to fight someone like Takeo Mizugaki or someone who's not Rafael Assunção or TJ Dillashaw.
It's time to put someone new over, I agree.
Well, he's going to destroy if he fights Takeo Mizugaki. He will destroy Takeo Mizugaki. And then people are going to go, all right, let's see him fight for the title. Theoretically, around the time that TJ Dillashaw fights Rafael Assunção again, Dominic Cruz will be getting back to training. So Dominic Cruz will probably fight the winner of that fight. So theoretically, it could be 2 more fights before Burrell, or 3 more fights before Burrell fights for the belt again. His contract could be up. Then he's a huge commodity, and his salary goes from $70,000 to like $100,000, $150,000 per fight, because there's another organization called Bellator that would love to have another bantamweight on their roster.
I've got it on good authority that Dominic Cruz has been dead for over 3 years.
Dead people. I've heard that as well.
My ninja resources, Hen and Burrell has exactly $642,385.64 in his bank account.
There we go.
$72.34 in his pocket right now as we speak.
That sounds legit. Let's face it though, people. TJ Dillashaw, he looks exactly like Colton Smith. How long do you think this guy's going to be champion? Let's open it up, anybody. How long do you think this shit's going to last for real? He looks like Colton.
I do want to comment on the fight real quick though. I agree with Ross. TJ was absolutely phenomenal. He punched at the right time, never stopped his hand. But from that same aspect, I was sitting right next to my black belt instructor, shout out to Gary Great, He's a great man. I love him to death. I was sitting next to him watching this at the time, and all he kept saying, he's a Charles Gracie black belt himself, and he's like, what in the hell is Henan Barrow doing? He's a black belt. I don't know what from what school, but he's a black belt, and he never once attempted to take this fight to the ground. And we were both questioning this the whole time. Like, what in the hell was Henan Barrow thinking? You get demolished in the first two rounds, first three rounds, hell, four rounds, standing up. At what point is Henan Barrow going to be like, I'm going to take this to the ground and use what, you know, got me to the game, use submissions? I mean, you got to try something. You got to know you've gotten your ass handed to you for the last four rounds or three rounds. You know, even in the first round, you might, I mean, that was so lopsided that you might want to think, hey, maybe I should take this guy down, or at least try to. And we also noticed that, you know, Henan Barrow was really flat-footed and didn't throw feints, didn't use angles and stuff like he usually does. So, not to discredit TJ Dillashaw, I mean, that first punch to the face could have just totally messed up Henan's game, and Henan didn't want to take any more punches. But I don't know, Henan Barrow, something had to have been up. I'm not going to say he was poisoned, but this seems really weird for one of the best athletes, one of the best, the most well-rounded people in the UFC to go in there and look horrible. Let's be honest. He looked really bad in that fight.
It was white belt status. Something wasn't right, man. I don't even know. Brittany Sonnen herself, the wife of Chael Sonnen, chiming in on Twitter. She is declaring that she's saying, damn it. Well, she didn't say damn it. It says, the name is Brittany Sonnen. I don't know how that happened as far as the tough interviews go. They're labeling her Brittany Smith. And at the same time, the caption, the subcaption under that says Chael's wife. It doesn't make any sense even as a mistake. Anyway,
wait, so she and Chael are probably listening in live?
You know what? Yes, 100%. Chael Sonnen, how's it going, man? One of the best in the business.
He is the best in the business. Get the facts straight.
I hear you. He whooped Wanderlei Silva's team's ass, and he's going to whoop Wanderlei Silva's ass. Assuming the fight does happen and Wanderlei shows up. Yeah, we saw you guys are going to this fight. All you guys are hooking up and meeting in some sort of, I don't know, some sort of homosexual shout out meetup Yahoo group or whatever the hell you guys
That's
got
right.
going on.
Nope,
you guys
you
meeting
on
up
that.
For UFC 175, I believe, in Vegas. You guys are all going to be there watching it live in person, sharing the same bed, breaking the same bread. Did you guys see the press conference for it? However, Chael Sonnen, in full effect, he was back. He stared down Wanderlei Silva and clowned him and humiliated him. Did you guys check that out? Are you guys hyped for this? What's up? What's happening there?
Did you not see my tweets about Chael mimicking Bret Hart and Razor Ramon doing the whole taunts? It was amazing.
I saw the man retweeted it, man. It was classic.
Amazing performance.
There's a lot of speculation that Chael himself is, although he denies it, he's one of the best, greatest wrestling fans of all time. But of course, he plays it off like he never watches the damn show. I don't know what's going on with that. People, maybe you guys can explain that to me sometime. Ask him that when you see him. And you guys will see him. But yeah, man, UFC 175, who the fuck's fighting besides Chael that matters? Weidman?
Uriah Hall,
Chris
yeah,
Whiteman,
Uriah,
Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, who else is on that card? That's like
Ronda Rousey and Alexis Davis.
Daniel Bryan, I think, was added to the undercard earlier.
Yep, Kane versus Hornswoggle. Oh, by the way, we will break down the Hornswoggle versus El Torito match coming up this Sunday.
Good.
This Sunday, one of the greatest MMA fights going down right now. Historic rivalry, Hornswoggle.
Why don't we just do that? Why don't we just get to that now? That's the biggest story all week.
Because it's not your show, you goddamned Jew.
Yeah, we did have one pressing.
Jake, I'm going to beat the shit out of you tonight, and you know it.
Oh, my God.
I got all the time in the world.
We do
so
have
much violence on the show.
Oh, you have no idea, man. Just wait, dude. There's angles coming, dude. And by the way, I was assaulted earlier today. It's a new version of the knockout game. I was just walking out of the damn convenience store. I had my, you know, I had two bags of groceries. You know, I got my, what did I get here? I got my fucking, I got my bomb sticks, my ice pops. I got Pure Leaf unsweetened tea, Powerade, beef jerky, and Ruffles. So I'm walking out with that, and then just minding my own business. And then I see three youths approaching me. And yes, they were African American. So I'm walking out, my hands are full, both hands are full. I'm just trying to get to my car, you know, I'm trying to get to my vehicle to come back and do the show. These three youths are walking up to me, you know, looking a little suspicious, but you know, I don't want to play that angle, man. Nothing against African Americans. And so I see them coming up to me and I'm like, oh, cool, you know, awesome. Maybe they know Yao. And then, one of them was just like looking at me up and down and we're about to pass each other. And then at the last second, he just yells, "Spoiler!" And then he punches me in the face and, he knocks me out. The next thing I know, I'm waking up with the clerk from the store just shining a flashlight in my eyes. I had $6,000 on me. They didn't take a dollar. It's like some new prank or something. They yell "spoiler" and they punch you in the fucking face. I don't know. I got to talk to you now. But anyway, you guys got to watch out for that. What's happening, Ninja?
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Do you? Do we have to? We should. You know what, people? We're in the Street Podcast. It was MMA. But we have to acknowledge that mixed martial arts exists in the world of pro wrestling. So yeah, let's real quickly, so I can give you people a sample here. Let's break down the upcoming fight, MMA fight, that's going down on Sunday between the WWE's Hornswoggle and El Torito. They're bitter rivals. Hornswoggle is the underdog. Open mic, open forum, anyone that gives a damn, who do you got? Who do you think is going to honestly win?
All right.
The WLC match, their first match together that went down on a big scale, El Torito whooped Hornswoggle's ass. What do you think is going to happen this time?
All right, I'll start. This fight, this rematch, is honestly probably the most anticipated, in my opinion. Just my personal opinion. Maybe some people out there have different opinions. But in my opinion, this rematch is the most anticipated rematch in the history of mixed martial arts. I am so excited that we get to see it. I think El Torito is one of the greatest, not just strikers, but one of the greatest unorthodox grapplers in all of mixed martial arts. Hornswoggle, though, is a brawler, and he just comes forward. He pushes the pace.
He's got a puncher's chance.
This is gonna be incredible. I mean, what kind of match is it again?
It's a masks versus hair versus mask.
Oh my God! This is unprecedented. I don't think we haven't seen a mask versus hair mixed martial arts fight in a long time.
A lot of our listening MMA audience is ignorant. Ross, can you break down exactly what that means and what is at stake between Hornswoggle and El Torito?
Why, certainly, Ramses. You see, in this match, if El Torito is to defeat Hornswoggle, Hornswoggle's hair will be shaved. He will be shaved bald.
God.
But if Hornswoggle is to defeat El Torito, El Torito will have to unmask and take off that bull costume. It's a very, 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 very intense matchup. Lives will be ruined. Images will be wrecked. Egos will be broken. Someone may die. I'm fairly certain a few people will die.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be incredible. I think the smart money is probably on Torito. You know, he came away with the win in the one of the Elimination Chamber at Extreme Rules. I'm sorry.
Yeah, WLC match.
Yes, the WLC. Hornswoggle, though, he you can never rule him out. He's a veteran. He's been around for over 8 years, and he's a monster. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a legend.
He's Vince McMahon's bastard son.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to go with Torito, but you can't count out Hornswoggle because everybody loves Horny.
Yep, and it is, you know, the WWE, they're not idiots. They know to put this on free TV, on the free, the pre-show to their pay-per-view, their payback pay-per-view. This is the only match that matters. Hornswoggle. I'm not gonna lie. I'm a Hornswoggle guy. I hope, even though he does share some of my roots, Hispanic roots, I hope that El Torito is killed during this match somehow. We saw Hornswoggle on Monday Night's Raw rip off El Torito's tail, ripped it off, threw it back at him, laughing. He did lose that match too, though. But Hornswoggle is the underdog. I'm not gonna lie. All right, it's not looking too good for him. It's hard to picture that, you know, the WWE would start, you know, hyping up El Torito and then have him unmask. It's hard to imagine him unmasking. It's easier to see Hornswoggle getting his head shaved, unfortunately. But El Torito, man, I really hope this is the end of him. I don't know, maybe they can do some stunt where they try to lower him from the roof of the arena and maybe something goes wrong. I don't know. I'm just saying. El Torito, you son of a bitch. I hope you burn in hell. I hope Hornswoggle wins. I am going to bet on the Swoggle. We will try to get him on the show. Anybody else have anything to say about El Torito? What's happening, Ninja?
Brandless.
Speak your mind. Tell us.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news. You do know that baldness runs in the McMahon family.
It does.
And this Sunday, another McMahon will become bald. Hornswoggle will be no more. Viva El Torito.
Ole, as they would say, my people. Sorry, guys, I'm hurting. I'm starting to, my eyes starting to swell up. I got knocked out. Spoiler. It was ridiculous, man. I got punked. Hands full of groceries, though. Otherwise, that shit would have never happened. I am a master of thug jitsu. No, they didn't take anything, man. It was just like, it's like the newest prank with these kids. It's ridiculous. Anyway, let's move on to some one more MMA topic before we sign off here, people. It's getting ridiculous, I understand. But the MMA topic that everybody was buzzing about, Ronda Rousey's breasts, her, let's face it, some pictures are surfacing on the internet. Ronda's titties are larger than normal looking. What's going on? What do you guys honestly think? Your professional opinions. There's speculation from our pals, our friends of the show, Front Row Brian and Super Kalo, whoever that guy is, speculating that Ronda is either pregnant or she had breast augmentation, breast implants of some sort. What do you guys think is going on, man? Are people just taking some pictures out of context, some weird angles, or you think there's something to this, guys? Are Ronda's breasts growing? It's the burning topic, MMA topic, here on the Win Street Podcast. Open mic.
Wait. What are you asking?
Ronda Rousey, her breasts have exploded. The internet is a buzz. They're saying she's either pregnant or she had a tit job. Haven't you seen the photos? They've been all over the place today. Her breasts are huge.
Does anybody have anything to say about this?
See, this is how I know.
I didn't even see anyone talking about it.
Yep, this is how I know that you four gentlemen, well, maybe not Ninja, he's not going down to UFC 75 in Vegas. This is how I know that you're all meeting up to do homosexual activities. You have nobody has anything to say about Ronda Rousey's spectacular breasts.
Because that's, Misha Tate's titties are way better anyway, even if Ronda Rousey has fake boobs now. It still doesn't matter because her body's not as good as Misha Tate. The only thing she's better at Misha Tate than is judo tossing people. What? So who gives a shit about Ronda Rousey? What? Let's just talk about Misha Tate's titties.
Whoa, last weekend,
she was in a bathing suit at the MGM Grand all weekend long. Oh my God. Let me tell you.
Back up for a second. And hold on there. First of all, Ronda Rousey is number one. Second of all, the reason why I refuse to speak is because I refuse to gossip about my future ex-wife. Thank you very much. Move along.
I mean, she does need to cut to get to 35, so for her to keep fighting at 135, I think she's smarter than to get breast implants.
Yeah, that's just more
weight. Even if she wants to do it, yeah, just wait until after your career. But no, not to push you in front of the bus or anything, but I didn't see anybody talking about that.
What are you talking about?
I retweeted Brian's pictures. The picture of her on the beach, it does appear that her breasts are larger even than before she starts a weight cut.
Don't you follow Lazy the Savage?
Listen up, gentlemen. Let me bury this rumor right here.
This is important.
Let me roll over in bed and ask the woman herself, hey, babe, you got fake boobs or are you pregnant?
You knocked her out, man. She ain't going to answer. She's out cold.
Spoiler.
She said no.
Yeah, Officer Allen, have you heard about this new knockout game? Just they yell spoiler and all of a sudden you're getting punched in the face and knocked out by a youth.
You know, in Baton Rouge, they only kill each other. They don't expand.
Yeah, man. It's hard times, man.
And rapes in the ditch, but that's another story.
Yeah, there was that horrible rape that we covered on last week's episode of the Word on the Street podcast.
What?
Again, I do like... it does sound like I'm laughing, but I'm actually choking on tears. You know, you guys remember? You guys are too young to remember. I'm the oldest person here. I'll admit it.
No, you're not.
Oh, Ninja's a couple years older. That's right. Well, then maybe you'll remember, Ninja, when Schindler's List, that film came out.
Yes, Liam Neeson. Yes, awesome movie.
It was a great movie. I remember when it dropped. Maybe Alan was there too. I don't know. But yeah, everybody's seen this movie. Steven Spielberg's masterpiece. It's a great movie, of course. And I hate to. You know, I'm sorry, Ross. I hate to bring up a downer, but anyway, Schindler's List. It came out, and then there was this story. I remember it got a buzz. Everybody was outraged because there was just a movie reviewer. He was talking about how somebody was in there with him in the theater watching Schindler's List, and this whoever it was in the audience was just laughing uncontrollably throughout the whole movie, just laughing at Schindler's List. And this movie reviewer was outraged. It was a national news story. And then they actually interviewed the person that was laughing, and he explained that that's what his body does. For some reason, something, I don't know. Instead of crying or, you know, whenever he would get emotional, his body's reaction was to laugh uncontrollably, just laugh. It's crazy. It's like when you're insane or something, I guess. But anyway, that's what just happened.
There's actually a documentary out about a guy named Jerry who actually made out with a chick during the movie Schindler's List. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that documentary, but
that was a good episode of Seinfeld. But I just want to say that there's nothing funny about what happened last week's episode. A woman was tragically raped in a ditch. Alan arrived just in the nick of time to save her life, actually, probably. Because, I mean, if you're raping a woman in a ditch, you go A to B. The next logical step is to murder her. But Alan prevented that. So Officer Alan is a hero, but he is going to fight my boy, I wish he was my son instead of what I'm stuck with in Ross. He's going to fight Yao, and I wish Yao was my son. I wish he was. Shout out Yao, man. He's still in the hospital. He's in rehab right now. He got addicted to painkillers after Ross actually shot him. Yeah, he'll be back, though. We're getting him. He's in rehab. You guys aren't going to stop him. This rematch is going down. He just had a little trouble. He needed the painkillers to get by, but now I spoke to him for a couple seconds. He's all right. Anyway, the woman being raped in the ditch, that's why I was laughing. Anyway, moving back to Ronda Rousey's chest, the matter at hand, the reason people are tuning into this podcast week after week, they want to hear hard-hitting topics like this. But, Alan, you said Misha Tate's body was better than Ronda's, but the rumor is that Misha Tate's chest is definitely fake.
It definitely is.
But she still got a better body than Ronda, even though Ronda's all natural. I'm talking Ronda.
Abs. Misha Tate has better abs, has better everything.
Talking post-fight Ronda. I'm talking getting lean and mean when she's all pissed off.
Yeah, Misha Tate's still anatomically more well put together.
I don't know, man. I think you might be completely...
I'm looking at Ronda Rousey right now in person, and no.
It's like you'll never get everybody to ever agree. Like, Misha versus Ronda, the who's hotter topic, it's like who would beat who, Bruce Lee or Anderson Silva, you know? And it's a question that we'll never get the real answer at it. God bless. What other MMA topics are out there besides Ronda's titties? Anybody got anything before we get the hell out of here?
Who was the referee that I know, I actually got a serious one. The referee that was reffing I think it was the Jamie Varner fight where he broke his ankle.
Oh my god, that was so gross. Oh, I've broken my own ankle before and that is so painful to watch.
Honestly, I thought it was bullshit too.
Who was the referee? That's fucking insanity right there.
It was either Herb Yamasaki or Mark.
No, it was some other white guy.
It was Jason Herzog.
That sounds like a fake name. What are you riding? What are you in a car now, Ross? What are you doing?
It's Jason Herzog, motherfucker.
Jesus Christ, what are you... What is this? Were you going to get some wind?
Ramsey's literally is a motherfucker because he fucked your mom, Ross.
Ross
is my bastard son. That was a shocking plot twist revealed four weeks ago. I don't remember when. But yeah, Rose Finkelstein was her name. His great mother.
What?
And that's just wrong on every level because I've met Ross's mom.
Well, so have I. I just knew her in the biblical sense as well.
Not
and I know
the
burning
dirty whore I used to date from Michigan, Doug.
You're damn right. And I'm sorry, Ross. You have to hear this, but you should know full disclosure. You know, me and Rose. I know the question burning in your mind is not, did we, but how many times did we? Consummate the marriage.
He don't give a fuck.
That's all I have to say about that. Wait, hang on. New MMA topic. There's something out there that's happening.
Fucking ridiculous.
This is the most ridiculous thing.
We're wrapping it up. I don't think there's going to be a title defense tonight. But yeah, let's wrap this up. There was some sort of topic. Something happened. You guys got anything on this Ariel Hawaii being banned from Bellator thing? Why do you think that happened? Who's got the word on that?
Because he's a Zuffa shill.
Listen, I'll tell you exactly what happened. The reason why he's banned is because Bellator has got a new Jew, and his name's Finkelstein. E before the L.
Damn, that's right. Seriously,
Ariel Hawaii is a douchebag, and they're just trying to get him out of the media spotlight. Goodbye, Ariel Hawaii. Goodbye.
On his show today, and I do listen to his show. Give them that. There's a certain point where I turn it off. Like, as soon as like they start showing those insanely creepy close-up shots of his producer, Rich from New York, his face.
New York Rick's a good guy.
Yeah, New Hampshire Nate. As soon as they start showing his fucking face, why is it so close up on his goddamn face? And it's like almost a fisheye lens, like. Why is it so close? It's bizarre. I always turn it off at that point.
I think the cameraman is sort of amateur-y, like wants to like zoom in so there's not as much negative space, but he doesn't realize he's zooming in to like an obscene degree.
No, there's something creepy about this guy, man. And all these guys are hipsters, and I'm sick of it, man. Rhode Island Rick, get back to. No, I'm sorry, get out of here, man. But I was listening to Ariel's show today, and he did have on, not only did he have on Henzo Gracie, and God knows what Henzo was saying. I love the guy to death.
Rhode Island Ron, what the fuck did you call him?
The weird guy with the alien close-up face, man. That's what he is in my mind. Dude.
Rhode Island Rick.
Yep. Oh, but Ariel also backpedaled on Bob Sapp today on his show. Like he's realized he's burned too many bridges in the MMA world. This was just—it was a litany of apologies on the Era Hawaii show. And he backpedaled on Bob Sapp, said he would like to remember Bob Sapp retiring now as being a legend and not a fight thrower. And he ate a little bit of shit, but not too much. Why is he doing this? Why is he getting blackballed left and right? And he was supposed to be the best.
I wanted to bring up too. Talk about Ariel and talk about backtracking the UFC 175 press conference. That was so fun. Like, maybe the most awkward moment I've ever seen during a presser where Ariel, shocker, tries to ambush someone, asks Alexis Davis a question like, so, Alexis, you said, which I thought, like, people from Canada were supposed to stick together, but Ariel completely tried to ambush and throw Davis under the bus, saying, like, oh, yeah, so, you were saying recently that karma was going to come around and bite Ronda Rousey. And Alexis is like, dude, you took that completely out of context.
Wait, I fucking missed this angle. Wait,
it was...
And then Dana was like, just fucking stirring the pot again or something.
Yeah,
he
asked Alexis Davis, like, so Alexis, recently you said that karma was going to come around and bite Ronda in the ass. Do you care? Which, what a shitty, lazy question if all you're, like, doing is posing a quote and saying, would you like to expand? Like, no, bitch, I already said the quote. Fuck you. Like, you know, I mean, I got a chance to meet Ariel. Honestly, I think he is a good guy. I think he has good intentions. But... man, he fucking sets shit like that up so much, and I don't really like that whatsoever. Like, oh, so there's this quote I dug up from 2 years ago, and I'm taking it completely out of context, but now that Ronda is here and we're in front of Ronda, you talked all this shit, so what are you gonna say now? Like, dude, come on.
Yeah, the problem is he is, he is the guy testing the waters in his field, so to speak. He's one of the best journalists. I'll give him that.
Sorry?
No, I was just going to say, that is part of the problem. he's pretty damn obvious when it comes to playing angles.
I do one other MMA thing I want to talk about is Robbie Lawler versus Matt Brown. That was announced today. That's going to be fun as fuck.
That was the biggest topic of the day.
I just got one drop for our boy Ariel. As much as I love you,
I call him out and he covers his mouth like a little fancy boy. I mean, what is that?
They call me Fancy Boy. You're a love man. When you walk in.
Yep, he's a dandy. He's a real fancy boy.
It still makes me laugh.
I love that
shit. God bless
dude.
Ariel. And also on the show today, it was a good show, man. It's worth watching back because, like I said, he was like
honestly
the apologist.
The people at MMA Fighting are good people. I got a chance to meet Rick at Glory 16. Hell of a guy.
Hell yeah, man! Long Island Rob, dude. Shout out, man. We should get him on the show sometime, dude.
Yeah, definitely. But
the episode was cool. Today's was good. A litany of apologies. He mentioned Bob Sapp. He admitted that he was banned from Bellator. He interviewed the Ninja's hero, our friend.
The greatest man that ever lived.
Hell yeah. He interviewed Henzo Gracie on his show today. Henzo, you know, opened up about his recent arrest for getting into an altercation, allegedly, with a bouncer at a club. Henzo says, you know, he probably would have whooped this guy's ass as much as they're hamming it up to be, except the guy ended up being some sort of total pussy or something. I'm not putting words in his mouth, but it's hard. I listened to the interview live as it happened. It was hard to kind of follow Henzo. His English is great, but he was yelling, and honestly, I really have no idea what the hell he was talking about for the most part, but he was telling fight stories left and right. He was raging about this guy and about honor and this and that and the history of... you guys have to listen to it, all right? I'm plugging Ariel's show. It's a must listen. Henzo Gracie was on there.
I'll tell you all what I'm going to do, and I've got to stifle the vomit that is coming up, so excuse me if I have to pause.
Spoiler.
What I'm going to do is I'm actually going to break, no pun intended, one of the rules that I have set, that the rule that I have in place that here in Ninja Land, Ariel Hawaii is never, ever allowed to speak or be seen in any capacity, but for you, the Word on the Street podcast listeners, I will, I will watch the Ariel Hawaii show. I will listen to the greatest man that ever lived, Henzo Gracie, and I will have an interpretation of what he said next week, live on the Word on the Street.
Spoiler.
Boy, sorry, that was hard to get through. It's a hard thing to admit. Hard thing.
I hear what you're spraying, man. No problem, Ninja. Yeah, we look forward to your listening of today's episode of the MMA Hour or whatever the hell it's called, and then reviewing it next week. just staying legit here. This is the Word on the Street podcast. A lot of people don't even know what the hell they're listening to. All right, I understand that, people. This is different, okay? You listen to, you know, Inside MMA, you're going to hear or see something different, all right? You're going to see breakdowns, timed formats, commercials. We don't do commercials here. Not yet, anyway. And it's not because there's a lack of sponsors. Trust me, I get emails. I got 20 unanswered emails right now in my bucket or whatever it's called.
Like a doctor!
Sponsors throwing themselves at my feet.
Wait, emails come in buckets now?
Yeah, outside the, you know, they leave it outside the door. I got tons of that, man.
Then wouldn't it be just mail?
Yep. I got, look at this. I don't usually like to brag on the air, but listen to this sound. That is a wad of $100 bills, people. It's more money than Henan Barrow will ever see in his goddamn life. And it's just in my pocket. I just tossed it onto the carpet. Plush carpet. Anyway, what did we talk about? Did the interviews. Got punched in the face. Spoiler.
Wait, so there was Ronda Rousey's titties. Like, payoff to that whole Point money swoggle. Thing that you just did?
We did break down the Hornswoggle. We covered Enzo Gracie, Ariel's show. There was one other thing in the MMA world that happened. What was it, people? Before we get the hell out of here and somebody does something crazy. Oh, that's right. You wanted to break that down. Let's go ahead and do that. That was the breaking news. Breaking news. Brown versus Lawler. They just fought literally a couple minutes ago. Now they're getting thrown back in the squared circle, octagon. What's going to happen in this fight, people? I actually am pumped about this. Weird how Lawler got paid so much money, $100,000 for that last fight. That was a high number, especially having dropped the belt to Hendricks. What was that all about? Now he's banking six figures? What? Anyway, he's going to fight Matt Brown, the Immortal. Brown doesn't give a damn. He was on Ariel's show today, too. What do you guys think? Who is going to realistically win this fight? What's happening? Open forum. Word on the street. What is it?
Yo, I haven't heard from Alan for a while. I just want to hear Alan's breakdown so we know he's not dead.
What's there to break down? I mean, I don't think either one of these guys like should be fighting each other. I think both of them should just be given title shots, but... You know, that's neither here nor there. I understand Hendricks is out and they can fight in the meantime. I'm not going to make a pick on this fight because I think it could go either way. I think Robbie Lawler is definitely more technical. He has a better gym that, you know, he trains with, you know, top level guys day in, day out. And we've seen the improvement that he's made over the past, you know, 10 years. Just looks brilliant. I mean, to go in there and make, you know, Jake Ellenberger, who, you know, is no slouch, but he goes in there and makes him just look like a school kid, or makes him look like, you know, I did today whenever I sparred against like actual pro fighters. You know, it's just ridiculous, like how good he is. And I know Mike Brown is tough, and I don't know. I can't really break it down. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be wild and crazy. Oh my God.
Oh yeah, my yeah. God, he's broken in half.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Both guys have incredible power. it'll probably stay standing if anyone is going to be the dominant fighter wrestling-wise. It'll probably be Lawler. I can see Lawler doing a lot of clinch work, maybe doing something we haven't seen him do much in his last couple fights, which is break out his offensive wrestling game, which his wrestling, you know, Lawler's always had heavy hands, but his wrestling and his composure inside the ring has really just gotten better and better as he's gotten older. You know, obviously was able to keep the fight against Ellenberger standing up. I really think the difference between Lawler and Brown, both of them could end the fight in an instant, but I think Lawler's chin is a little bit more formidable. Brown, you know, Brown has been rocked, and, you know, I would not be shocked whatsoever if Brown came up with a KO win. Whoever wins is probably going to win via KO, you know, unless Lawler looks to sort of clinch and work his ground game a little bit. But, you know, honestly, Brown, I mean, he's not a fucking slouch. Brown just, you know, as easily as Lawler has shown in his last couple fights, could end up keeping it standing. I think most of the fight ends up on the feet, and I think that Lawler's, you know, more formidable chin leads him to a victory. But both of these guys, very similar fighters, you know, really good wrestlers with some fucking heavy hands.
Well, I love this fight, and I'm not going to get too into detail because when we get closer to it, I'm going to break it down like every little aspect because this is one of those fights that's like championship caliber, but it's not actually for a title. What I love about this fight is obviously they're both brawlers. They both want to stand and trade, but the improvement that these guys have made. I mean, if you told me in the beginning of 2011 that Robbie Lawler and Matt Brown would be fighting on Fox in a number one contenders fight in the main event to fight for the UFC welterweight championship in 2014, I'd look at you and I'd laugh hysterically and ask you what you're on, because that sounds preposterous. And yet here we are, it's 2014, and on July 26, 2014, Robbie Lawler is going to fight Matt Brown in the main event in a 5-round welterweight bout for a number one contender spot in the welterweight division, a shot at Johnny Hendricks for the welterweight title. What's great about this is the big thing that, other than wrestling and just really just refining everything, the big thing that Matt Brown has added to his game is his ability to cut off the cage. It's tremendous. He just stalks guys. He just stalks them. He goes across cage. He walks guys down, and he cuts it off, which is a very, very, very hard thing to do. I mean, that's probably one of the most important things in MMA is to have that ability to cut off the cage, and most fighters can't do it because the octagon is almost like a circle, and it's very hard to cut off a circle. A boxing ring, it's much easier. There's four sides, so it's easy to back someone into a corner or just back someone against the ropes.
The octagon is literally a squared circle when you break it down.
Yeah, it really is. So it's very difficult to back someone against the cage because they could just circle out. But Robbie Lawler too is very good at it, but Matt Brown has really mastered it. Robbie Lawler, though, on the other hand, does it too. He's very good at walking guys down and just coming forward and eating your shots and trading. So this is going to be very interesting. It's going to be fast-paced. It's going to be a race to see who can walk the other guy down first. I think Matt Brown is a little bit quicker when it comes to walking a guy down. He just really comes forward and just walks to the other side of the octagon, and it's literally on your side of the cage before you can even walk. I mean, he literally runs to the other side of the cage. So it's going to be really interesting. I don't know who the hell is going to win. I love it. I don't want either guy to lose. I want both guys to win because this is just fucking awesome.
Yeah, as far as the UFC, this is the UFC's version of Hornswoggle versus El Torito. I do agree 100%. Anybody want to weigh in on Brown versus Lawler before we get to the last topic of the night on the Win the Street podcast? Speaking of,
ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Uh-oh.
I know exactly how this fight's going to go.
What?
I can tell you exactly what's going to happen.
What?
This fight, these two men are going to come forward and be in the middle of the ring. When that bell rings, when the ref says, let's get it on, they're going to stand, they're going to touch gloves, they're both going to come out swinging, and the first person that connects is the one that's going to win that fight. Because they both have tremendous power, tremendous striking ability, and the only thing you have to do to win this fight is land that one game-changing punch. And whoever does that, the other guy's game plan goes right out the door, because both of these guys are game changers when you step in the ring. And that's what's going to happen, is you're going to see, much like Hannah Brown, TJ Dillashaw, I think Dillashaw came out, landed that one punch that Brown needed to get to break his game, and I think that's going to be the exact same thing that happens in this fight. First one that lands a punch is going to be victorious. I'm calling it right now.
This is it. This is what you do.
As God is my witness, Ninja. You called that one. Last topic. Let's get to it, people. And let me say something real quick. The trivia thing, we totally have to take another look at it. We have to revamp it. We have to come back. It has to be, I listened to the last podcast, and honestly, gentlemen, that the way we have the trivia format set up on this show is unlistenable. It was unlistenable. It was ridiculous. The only people that gave a shit were maybe the people playing the actual trivia game.
They don't give a fuck no more.
And I was one of them, and I can say I didn't care. We have to revamp it. The new EA UFC game is coming out. I do have the ability to stream the game live. So does Jake. We're going to figure out a way to do live matches for the goddamn title when this game drops.
Yo, honestly, start tweeting in now. June 17th, Ramses and I are both going to pick that shit up. Tell us what you want the first matchup to be.
Yep. We'll keep it going. There's going to be a marathon there. As soon as this game drops on June 17th, I'm going to be there playing it, live streaming it. And it looks like it's going to be me and Jake, man, just doing You Call It matches. You call it, people. Get your PS4.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. If we're streaming on, I think Ustream, if someone posts a comment, it actually pops up in the corner of the screen. So
on we'll the video streaming live.
We'll have the tweeters up. And Ramses, I will agree, I produced the last few shows, and yeah, the trivia is fun. I love doing it, but it is unlistenable as fuck.
The best part is the storyline advancement, but you have to sit through dead air. It's obvious that everyone's cheating. We gotta do this straight up. The EA UFC game's coming out.
Look at my fucking eyes. Do I look high to you, guy?
You're gonna have to. You can. I don't know, man. Maybe you can hook up with Yao, going on a couple jobs with him. Rob some people. Get that cash. Get that PS4. We're going to have to switch things up, people. We can't even do the trivia time. We don't have time. But honestly, it's time to switch up the format. So ratings are in the tank. All right. The sponsors, instead of 40 emails a day, I'm getting 20. Like I said earlier, it's ridiculous, man. I'm fucking dying.
In the bucket outside your door, by the way.
You're damn right. I got punched in the face. Spoiler. And like I gotta pay. I don't even know how many teeth are still left in my head. All right. I gotta go to the fucking hospital after this show. But last topic on the Word in the Street podcast before we end this shit. UFC tonight switched to its new slot. Wednesdays, prime time. Chael Sonnen hosting. It was probably his deal that he worked out. He got a better slot, whatever. Anyway, on this last episode, Chael Sonnen not only mentioned our friend Front Row Brian, gave him a shout out, gave him credit for breaking some news, MMA news. He also interviewed Jim Ross from the WWE, the legendary announcer. He's even wrestled some. He's been set on fire. Burned alive by Kane himself. Jim Ross was on UFC tonight. Same episode. Chael Sonnen puts Front Row Brian over mentioning him on the air.
Talking about Chael putting FRB over, I actually have a Vine clip here where Chael gives our boy Front Row Brian a shout out.
Let's do it.
Day out as coach of the Black Zillions.
You know, Aaron, I had heard this earlier today from Front Row Brian, who had texted me. I actually...
Hell damn, yeah. Man. And I'll make sure I turn the...
FRB.
And I will turn the volume up on that shit in post.
We heard it just fine over here on the headphones. But
true.
I don't know what...
I could barely hear it. Never mind.
I don't know, man. It might have been all good. I don't know. But yeah,
I heard it.
Putting him over Front Row Brian on UFC tonight. I was shocked. What did you guys think, man? Are you guys happy for the Front Row Brian, or do we have any FRB enemies out there?
I'm sure Dana wasn't happy.
Yeah, man. But you know what? What are you gonna do, man? It's Chael's. This is Chael's show. Let's be honest. It was probably day two he got rid of Tweeden.
Listen, people.
She was pregnant for 3 years.
Chael, It's Shale piece done. And this guy signs Dana White's paychecks. Shale can put over any man he wants. He can get a personality from the WWE to come on his show. Shale Sonnen runs the world. You all don't know it, but you better believe it. Shale's listening to us right now. God bless you, Shale Sonnen, the king of the world, the king of your world. All hail King Shale.
I don't know if I've ever heard Ninja, like, not speak in, like, promo form. Like,
cutting a promo.
Like a Ninja... Ninja walks in a Starbucks like, "Hi, sir, what sort of coffee?" "Listen up, I don't just want a coffee, I want a decaf, and you know what I want on that decaf." Like,
I'm breaking down the fourth wall, but that is exactly why I wanted the co-host immediately, or the Ninja as my co-host immediately on the show when we first got this thing off the ground. The Ninja, it was me, the Ninja, man. We talked a few times on. I did the Sonnen Fan Club unofficial Halloween party online through Tiny Chat, and that's where I met, I think, the Ninja and Alan. And then I started doing the show, called into the MMA podcast that Jake was hosting, and then now, you know. Now we have this nightmare that you've all witnessed.
Yep, this horrible monstrosity of a podcast. Should we just start playing it out, or do you have anything left?
I do want to say, well, yeah, I do want to say, Front Row Brian finally getting his recognition credit as he does deserve. That guy, I will vouch for him, and Chell referred me to him. That's how that whole thing got started. I consider him a friend. You guys have met him. You're going to meet him up there in Vegas. He definitely, I want him to be there and doing some play-by-play on the Allen versus Yao rematch. We'll get him out there.
Almost needed to back him up against some punk last time in Vegas.
It wasn't just some punk. It was that real talk guy. Bob,
I totally forget. Yeah, Bob, fuck it, I forget his name, bro.
The guy that clowned or tried to clown Chael. You can look up the video on YouTube. He was that guy that was like, "Real talk, you stink, Chael. I'm a wrestler. I'm from Oklahoma." And Chael just silenced this man, destroyed him. Bill Smallwood destroyed him, just like Kelvin did. Kelvin actually choked this fool out in an amateur MMA fight. In about 40 seconds.
I think it was a pro match, just not a big circuit, yeah.
Yeah, it was less than a minute. Kelvin choked this fool out. And Sonnen did the same, except just with his mouth. But yeah, Bill Smallwood, he stepped up to Front Row. Brian, you were there. Actually, tell the goddamn story. You were there.
Yeah, Gastelum is 8-0 now. His fourth win was against Bill Smallwood. Honestly, it was just, really, really sort of weird. We're all, sitting there at a table. It's me, Alan, and Brian, and we're all chilling, talking. This Canadian couple who, like, stood behind us in line, I think, or something, super nice, and this guy who, like, no one really knew and was, like, wearing fighter gear and shit. And we're all talking, you know, exchanging pleasantries. The couple says, "Oh, we're from Canada. We are here to see GSP fight." Smallwood, you know, like, "Oh yeah, I'm a fighter and I'm an Oklahoma boy." Lurk der der. And it's like, "All right, cool. You're like, "Oh, I'm Johnny's best friend." It's like, "All right, like I don't know if he said he was his best friend, but was repping Oklahoma wrestling." Long and the short of it, me, Alan, and Brian say we're all Chael fans. And he goes, "Oh, you all won't like me. I am that guy who gave Chael a bunch of shit at the Q&A. Ha, ha, ha." And then Brian's like, "Yeah, I know exactly who you are." And, the guy was pretty, you know, physically imposing. And Brian stood his ground like, "Dude, that was a really shitty thing." And Smallwood's like, no, you know, me and Chael are buddies, and it was cool. And Brian's like, no, man, that was, like, really fucked up. That was a really fucked up thing. And Smallwood literally goes nose to nose with Brian, like, what the fuck you gonna do about it? I'll go and get all of my buddies and beat the three of y'all up, me, Brian, and Alan. And Alan's like, really, dude?
Cop.
Like, really? You're a fucking fighter, and you're telling us, like he had just gotten through with a rant about how he's a fighter, and we're all fans, and we all aren't shit. And then he threatens to beat us up, and Alan was quick to point out the ridiculousness of that claim. And it was really sort of surreal, because George St. Pierre and Royce Gracie are up on stage, like, rolling, like, GSP's blindfolded, like, some, like, UFC Karate Kid shit is going on stage, yet everyone in the fucking Hollywood, I think it was, like, the Hollywood Theater in the MGM Grand, it's where David Copperfield, I guess, always does his shit, the Hollywood Theater. And, like, everyone in the fucking house isn't looking at, like, GSP and Hoist, but they're all staring at our fucking table. Because like, Bill's, like, his chest is all puffed out, blah, blah, blah. We actually eventually, it calmed down, and everyone said they were sorry, namely Smallwood. And in a little bit, we actually saw, A member of Team Sonnen, Alan, Brian, and I all went and chatted with Rudy for a while, but
Rudy's son, Chael's uncle, right?
A wild story. You know, I met Rudy, met Chael, met Brittany, met Clayton. Still have not gotten a chance to meet Jamie, but firsthand, I can attest. Team Darkseid, some nice ass people. Alan, I don't know, you and me might be forced to kick a little ass in Vegas in about a month.
I'm down to whip Bill Smallwood's ass. I'll move up to 185 or 170, whatever the fuck he wants to do.
You should have done it that day, man. You should have just done it. Nobody would have.
I don't know.
Nobody would have missed him.
Honestly, I have no ill will toward him. Like, yeah, he was up in my friend's face.
He seems a little crazy.
He just seems like, I don't know. Like,
kind of.
He's a fucking loser.
I felt kind of bad for him because GSP was the first to roll. Once GSP left, the Canadian couple were out of there. So we had left, the couple left, he was, like, sitting alone for, like, an hour, and I, like, kept looking over, and the guy just looked, I don't know, he looked sad.
Bill Smallwood, people.
Listen, Bill Small Penis, I know you're listening.
He's gearing up.
You son of a bitch. You pretend that you're a fighter, you're not a fighter, because obviously people with better minds beat you at what you thought was your own game. Real fighters don't need to say they're fighters to know that they're badass. Bill Smallwood, your record must be a shame, because that's all you are to my business, my sport.
What?
Bill Smallwood,
what?
That is the bottom line.
What?
Because the ninja said so.
And that's the bottom line.
Because the ninja said so. Hell yeah, people. You just did get a hell yeah, ninja. You know what? Let's go out.
Oh, on, hell yeah.
I love it. I love it so much. I can't take it. It's time for the cocaine. Or maybe you guys do the heroin and you chill out. But now's the time, people. It was a great show. Thanks to our legitimate guests. Coaches Robert Fallis and Jamie Huey. Thanks to Ronda Rousey and Misha Tate for obvious reasons. Britton Smith, Chael Sonnen, and Michael H. Smog Beltor, Enzo Gracie. The Gracie Ninja on Twitter. The MMA Podcast on Twitter. Westland Eagle AH on Twitter. Jake, Officer Allen. Thank you so much. My bastard son Ross, who signed off. He apparently was at the goddamn drive-thru in the middle of the podcast. Thanks to him for doing that.
Speak up, we'll cocksucker.
We'll be back next Tuesday, people. Stay black or whatever color you currently are. Spoiler, watch out, people. Hornswoggle versus El Torito this Sunday. Of course, Saturday we have 13 hours of UFC fights.
Rogan's gonna do another companion podcast. I'm stoked.
That's right. They haven't cock-blocked him yet. It's only a matter of time before they do. But watch those, man. It's pretty good. He gets stoned off his ass and he does commentary. He's working for free and he don't even know it. God bless him, Rogan, Eddie Bravo, Joey Diaz, Bill Cosby. Listen next time. This is the word in the street, people. Tomorrow, the MMA podcast. Listen to that. We are out.
Stay black.
Till your head like it go. Don't think I'm scared.